Hello, I'm Emily Webb, and you're with Outlook, where remarkable people tell us the stories of their lives. To set the scene for today, I'm taking you back to the 1960s through the eyes of a Jamaican entrepreneur and shop owner.
My name is Patricia Dorothy Chin. They call me Miss Pat. My store was located at 17 North Parade in the heart of Kingston. It was a very nice atmosphere, a lot of buyers and sellers, because the people would come in from the country in the buses and they would just spread out on the sidewalk and sell.
And what would they be buying? What would they be selling?
Well, they were selling fruits and vegetables. So it was a hustle and a bustle, trying to make life.
Walking along North Parade, you'd hear strains of music that would get louder until you reached the doors of number 17, Miss Pat's shop. A record store called Randy's.
And you would have people gathering up, dancing or just listening. Young people would just come and listen.
Inside, you'd squeeze past customers, musicians, people at the counter just eating patties and drinking soda, and make your way upstairs to Randy's recording studio.
There were a lot of steps, very narrow steps going up. And then you'd have maybe posters on the side of the wall. And then when you go up in the studio, we had a lot of equipments, mics, wires all over the place. We had pianos, drums and guitars and everything lying all over the place.
And would there always be people in there making music?
Yes, just hear a lot of music. But when you're downstairs, you could not hear the music because we had a store downstairs, which was also playing music. So there was a lot of music upstairs and downstairs. And on the sidewalk, you would have people dancing or singing along.
The night seems to fade, but the moonlight lingers on.
A lot of men gather and bang their record. The counter was like 10 feet long, and here was I spinning the disc. We had two turntables, and it was 6 days a week. That's what happened. The music played from 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the store. Every day was music.
Oh, Babylon, the place I long to go.
Miss Pat is a giant in the Jamaican music industry. What started off as that little store, Randy's, would become VP Records, one of the world's largest reggae labels. And to get there, Miss Pat has been through it all, dealing with her husband's alcoholism, fleeing her home, her beloved record store, and rebuilding her life in a new country. Hers is a story of resilience, a few regrets, and a lot of reggae.
We'll be raining in Babylon.
Miss Pat was born in 1937. She lived in Kingston with her parents and two siblings.
We had a small house, like a one-bedroom, very tiny, maybe 12 by 12, and everything was crammed in the house. Life was not easy. We grew up very poor, and my father, he worked in an haberdashery, and his father came from India, and he lost his father when he was 12, so he was just, you know, trying to make life when he met my mother. My mother's parents came from China, and she was a housewife. She didn't work.
And when your parents met and your parents got married, how did their families react?
My mother's parents did not accept my dad because they usually want to marry in their same culture. So I didn't know my Chinese side until I was about 12.
Mm-hmm. So your grandparents wished that your mother had married another Chinese person?
Yes, that is it. 100 years ago, that was like a no-no. So I know that it wasn't so normal, but it didn't bother me because we got a lot of love from both parents and my grandmother, which is my father's stepmother.
Mm-hmm. What sort of a person was your father, would you say? How would you describe him?
Oh, my father was very loving and kind. And he teach us from our small to help others. But when my father drink, he was different. Mm-hmm. He wasn't violent, but he was just different. And he would curse. And I couldn't understand why. I was very confused. And my mother, being the mother she was, she usually shielded us a lot. She didn't want to expose us for that, but we realized that it wasn't normal for him, you know, to be in that state. So at an early age, I could really reflect back how hard it was for him to support us. But he was a very good worker because he did a lot of things when he worked at the haberdashery so that the company would gain more money.
He built this business up. And isn't that something that you inherited and took to school with you? I've heard something about marbles.
Yes. My dad used to work at the haberdashery, so I said, can we get some marbles and a big box of rubber band, which I took to school and I sold it for my lunch money.
Did you enjoy that?
I did pretty well and I enjoyed to have a toy. Like, I mean, I would rate today as a cell phone, marbles and rubber band was the big thing during 100 years ago for the kids because we didn't have toys, mm-hmm. you know.
Tell me about your neighbors and their radio.
Well, people that were well off, they had radio at that time. We didn't have a radio. So we would go beside the fence and listen to their radio. And I remember they would open their door so that we could listen in. And they listen to a lot of cricket.
Well, here we are then, back ready for the start of the second West Indian innings.
The sports that I remember my father used to love is cricket.
Here we go then, the West Indians 4 runs ahead on the first innings.
I've got some records here to put you in the mood.
How did you first meet Vincent?
Vincent drove a bread van and he delivered the bread, and there was a shop close to me, and so whenever he came to deliver the bread, that's how I get to know him.
What do you remember about your first impressions of him?
He smoked. He was a bad boy because he grew up on the street himself, and he had a child before I knew him. He was a bad boy. I think that's what attracted me to him. Because I was so sheltered and strict. Mm-hmm.
What did he look like?
He was very handsome. And the thing I liked about him, that he cared about other people. I think being poor and being... He's also mixed. His mother is black and his father is Chinese. So he could identify being a mixed race. He usually tells me that his mother was not allowed to go with them to Chinese school when they have different events. She would stay home and he felt sorry for her. So I think even at an early age, he developed a complex of being Chinese and black.
Yeah. So at the time you'd met, you'd been planning on becoming a nurse.
Yes.
When exactly did those plans change?
I got pregnant and then I quit the nursing, went back home. And my dad didn't talk with me for 8 months.
For eight months.
Didn't speak with me. And we married about a month before I have the baby. My dad took us to the church and he accepted Vincent from that time on.
So you were starting out in life. You and Vincent had got married and you were bringing up your son. What were the circumstances around your son's death? How did that happen?
My son developed meningitis and he died on his birthday. That was 1 year. And I was pregnant with my second son, 7 months pregnant. So I didn't even go to his burial since I'm pregnant. They said it was not a good way to take part in the funeral or to bury him. So that part, which I regret even today, I didn't know where my son was buried.
And how old were you when all of this was happening?
I was about 20.
20 years old?
Yes.
Before your son's death, Vincent switched jobs. Tell me, what exactly was that job?
Yes, Vincent was then working with Jukebox Company. He would leave Kingston, go around the island and change the jukebox records. Jukeboxes were the machine that they put in the bars, the restaurants, and the grocery stores. So he would take the old records out and put the new records in. And sometime I used to travel with him.
What were some of the places that you go to? Would there be some quite sort of remote spots that you'd show up with these records?
Yes, all over the island. Mm-hmm. We started from Kingston, go to St. Anne's, Montego Bay. A lot of different places, small bars, big bars, clubs, restaurants.
My love must be a kind of blind love.
Sometimes we have to sleep in the car. But it was fun, you know, when you're young, you have fun doing those things. And I would take my little typewriter and I would put the names on a little slip of paper. So I get to know the songs very well and the artists and the music.
Are the stars out tonight?
And I remember the excitement when he goes to change the jukebox, how happy the people were. Getting new records.
All aboard the night train.
Because we didn't have much entertainment at that time. It was just a jukebox.
Miami, Florida.
When he entered the store or the bar, to me it was like a boxer going in the ring. They were so excited seeing him come in with these boxes of records to change them. It was a feeling of joy and happiness.
So when he'd go to drop off the records, he'd also pick up all the old records that had been in the jukeboxes before.
Discarded.
How did the idea to create your own record store come about?
Well, we had quite a lot of these rejects records. He would bring them home. And when the songs get old, those records from the jukebox, they were not available anymore in the stores. So it was maybe my instinct to say a lot of people cannot afford a new record, why not resell them? So we asked his boss if we could buy them out because they didn't know what to do with these rejects. And that's how it started. Vincent had a friend that had a small store at 18 East Street downtown. Maybe it was 4x10 space. It's just a grocery store that you sell music. We did so well that on Saturdays, there was a line to come in the store. We did so good that we moved to 70 North Parade.
Where did the name Randy's come from? Why did you decide to call the store Randy's?
My husband used to listen to a radio station in Tennessee, and we named it after that DJ that was playing.
So the guy who ran the radio station was called Randy,
yes.
And so it was a kind of tribute to this radio station in Tennessee.
Yes, we love the name, so we just call the name Randy's Record. I knew all the records. I make it my duty. I'm very inquisitive. I ask everything. Who make them? Who played in them, who was a singer.
My boy, you made my heart go giddy up.
So when a customer comes in, sometimes they don't know the name of the record, but I would bring them one side and say, hum it for me, let me hear. Who sings it? Is a man, is a woman? What are they singing about? And I would find the record for them because I knew all the records in my head.
And this was all happening during a very significant period in Jamaica, which was when Jamaica was gaining independence from the UK. And this was 1962. How would you describe the atmosphere in Kingston as Jamaica was gaining its independence?
Oh, there was joyous time. Our flag was all waving all over the place.
At 3 minutes to midnight, the flag of Jamaica is borne into the arena by runners of the Boys Brigade and received by the Prime Minister. The Union Jack is lowered, and the new flag of Jamaica raised.
Jamaica was the happiest island in all the Caribbean. Kingston was in holiday mood, and the whole population hung out the flags and metaphorically threw its hat in the air.
Everybody was so free and happy. So it was a very, very exciting and wonderful time.
Jamaica getting their independence, and everyone is happy.
And I think it gives us a lot of freedom to develop our music also. So it was a year of new development, new life, new fun.
Independence also marked the beginning of the couple's own record label, as Vincent, wanting to produce his own music, teamed up with the up-and-coming singer Lord Creator.
And then my husband made a song, Independent Jamaica, with Lord Creator.
Let's go! Independent Jamaica!
And it was so popular on the street, and it became a big hit.
Vincent, thrilled with the song's success, decided to build a music studio above the store. Called Studio 17, it was for him to make more music and hire it out to other producers and musicians.
We'd have all the musicians gathered there to go upstairs to do their session because people would hire the studio. So when those people finished their studio time, they would come down and a new set of musicians, or sometimes the same musician, would come up. And if they need a backup singer, or an artist, or a guitarist, or a piano musician, they would call from downstairs and they would go upstairs to get a job.
This is people who would gather sort of around the shop and also in this spot just around the corner called Idler's Rest, is that what it is?
Idler's Rest, that's where everybody would hang out. You would have people dying to get a job upstairs.
I love that idea though, that they're sort of, they're in the studio and some bassist hasn't shown up and someone will just shout out of the window and then get somebody up from Idler's
Rest.
Yes,
yes, that's how it was done. Delroy Wilson, come upstairs. Or Niney, come upstairs. Anybody they want, they had it. Because we had all the instrument there, they didn't have to walk with their instrument. The musician, when they come downstairs from the studio, I would help them because I would play the record very soft.
I'm still in love.
And I would listen and I said, you know, I think you could bring up that instrument a little more, or the voice ought to come up a little more.
You don't know how to love me, not even how to kiss me.
When they come down from the studio to test the records, that's the first time the public hears the record. Mm-hmm. So you will see the reaction, because maybe you'll have 10, 15 people in the store buying. So that was a very good gauge of knowing the record before it hit the street.
So would you be able to see it straight away? So as soon as you play a song, you would know straight away if it was going to be a hit?
Yes, you could see the reaction of the people. And there was, yes, man, this one is a hit. This is it. This is it. This is the hit. Every producer who come downstairs, it's a hit, whether it's a hit or not.
And then they bring it to Miss Pat, and Miss Pat would be like, I'm sorry.
Everybody has a hit.
What was Vincent, your husband, what was his role in all of this? I mean, how would he interact with the musicians?
He was very good with the musicians and the producers. And he was very sociable. He did not think harshly of, regardless of how they dress or look. Some of the musicians didn't even wear shoes going to the studio. You see, sometimes the producers didn't have enough money to pay, but we allowed them to use the studio and pay later.
You say that your husband, that he'd spend a lot of time socialising with the musicians. Do you think that you realised back then that his drinking was a problem?
Yes. Yes, he socialized a lot. Even when we closed the store, he would hang out with them and smoke and drink. So I guess doing it so frequent, my husband drank a lot.
In the meantime, his producing work was actually really taking off along with the studio. And I think it was back in 1968, there was this bubblegum pop song called Sugar Sugar, which was a big hit in the US. And Vincent wanted to pull together some musicians to make a reggae cover.
I don't know if Sugar Sugar was all that a big artist.
Sugar.
Didn't Bob Marley and the Wailers do it?
Oh, yes, I remember that. But remember, Bob Marley at first didn't make hits, you know.
Okay, so I love that that's the context as well. You're like, he wasn't that big an artist.
Oh, honey, honey, honey. Sugar. Oh, sugar, sugar.
So Bob Marley was someone who used to be around the shop a lot in the early days. What are your earliest memories of him hanging around the shop? What would he be like?
He was very shy. I mean, he didn't stand out in the crowd or anything because everybody sang and everybody sung like Bob Marley. Nobody knew that he was going to be famous.
Someone who did stand out there is this producer, Lee Scratch Perry, this legendary reggae producer. And he decided to work with Bob Marley on his album Soul Rebels, along with the Wailers. And they decided to record it at Studio 17. It was his first album that would be released internationally. Do you think you knew, with your eye for a hit, do you think you knew when they were upstairs making that music that there was some magic happening?
Yes, it had a sound. Lee Perry was very creative. Because remember, Lee Perry always experiment on new sounds. When Lee Perry came, say would carry a piece of stick, a Candence can, a grater, everything that make a sound. That's why people thought he was a crazy man, but he wasn't crazy, he was a pup. He always said to me, Pat, my husband was the only one who had rented him the studio because he would up there for a whole week. He would hire the studio for a whole week and just experimenting, experimenting on sounds.
Who is Mr. Brown?
And then after Bob Marley become famous, then things start to really show their face.
You'd had all of these other Bob Marley recordings that nobody had really been that interested in before. But then when it started to pick up, what happened at the store? What did you do?
I had to take up all the dead stock and brush them off, clean them off. We couldn't have enough Bob Marley records to sell. That's how we knew that he was becoming a hit.
Because everybody suddenly came
everybody
in and wanted
came,
to buy Bob Marley.
Everybody came, won Bob Marley. Everybody okay. won Bob Marley. It was just going out the door like that. I really remember that time when I was so happy, even when the other producers, we pray for them to make a hit that they can come back and pay for the money that he owes us. We pray for them, hope you make a hit that you can come back and pay off your bills. So when Bob Marley started to make the hit in England, we were so happy because we get rid of all of the dead stock. Everybody wanted Bob Marley.
You spoke about the optimism in the country around independence and that kind of joyful mood in Kingston in 1962. By the mid-70s, how were things?
Well, things began to change. There was a lot of riot going on. And during the days at the shop, we had to draw down the shutters 2-3 times because people were just rioting on the street. And it was very dangerous. And I remember bringing in all the vendors on the sidewalk because we become such good friends. And when the riot passes, then we would open back the store. 3-4 times a day we'd have to do that.
3-4 times a day. What were the riots about?
It was like, you have to share what you have with me because you have more than I do, you know.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of inequality in the country, so it was a lot of rioting around the inequality.
And
yeah,
so many riots going on, so many people killed. It was unbearable. And that is why my husband and I decided. We didn't even talk it through, we just said we had to leave, we had to leave.
The day that you left and you closed up Studio 17, what was it like to walk away from everything that you'd spent so many years working so hard to create.
It was a sad time for us, and it's still sad to have developed a business, so much people dependent on us to rent the studio. I miss my friends, I miss my customer, I miss my community.
So when you arrived in New York, you decided to build up the business again, essentially, from scratch. You called it VP Records. Where did that name come from?
So when we were supposed to register the business, the man asked us, so what's the name of the business? Vincent looked at me and I look at him. They don't have a name. You know, you're so busy with trying to get the kids in school, trying to find where to live, trying to where to shelter. We never think of a name. So we just say, you know, just give it Vincent, which is your name, and Pat, Patricia, and that's how it comes, VP Records. And that was the easiest way to select a name.
How was the transition, going from Kingston to New York, trying to settle in?
Very, very, very hard. Remember, we didn't have anywhere to live. We were staying with my sister-in-law in the basement, and I wanted somewhere to live, close the store. It was a nice area called Jamaica Estate. But he said, the real estate said, no, I can't take you up there. But I didn't ask why. But afterward, I realized that I couldn't live there because it was a white neighborhood. So I guess I didn't know about prejudice because I didn't grow up like that. So when I came, that was a big awakening for me.
And how did people respond to you as a woman in this very male-dominated world that must have been the music scene in the 1980s?
Well, we used to do telemarketing. They used to call us and we would write what they need. So they would say to me, Miss Pat, can you put on a man for me on the phone? I said, why? He said, because I don't think you're going to know what I need.
I've heard that when people would ring up, that you just say, try me. Go on, try me.
Yes, try me.
Yeah.
Yes, and then they'd realize that I knew what they wanted. So afterward, they get comfortable to hear my voice.
So you were living in New York, but meanwhile, over in Jamaica in 1988, there was this devastating hurricane that hit, Hurricane Gilbert. What had happened to Studio 17 during that hurricane?
Well, we know that it was demolished, it was broken into, and the house top fell off, and all the equipment was damaged, and all the papers was all over the place.
And you'd found out that there was looting after the hurricane?
Yes. The equipment, they tried to break in the little safe that we had. Everything was destroyed.
When you left the country, you left a lot of the original tapes at Studio 17. Did you just sort of assume that they'd all been destroyed?
Yes, everything was left there because we didn't even think we were going to stay in America that long. We just thought, said, oh, we'll stay for a time. When Jamaica get back good, we'll go back home. We didn't take the tapes with us.
Meanwhile, in New York, Miss Pat was trying to make a success of VP Records. They were exploring a new sound emerging from Jamaica. Dancehall.
Yes, dancehall is really the genre that put us on the map. Because I think dancehall was similar to hip-hop. In the early 70s, hip-hop was just beginning to bloom also in America. So the young people gravitate to dancehall versus the roots music. This woman never troubled no one. I'm a lady, I'm not a man. MC is my ambition. I come free nice of Jamaican. So bam, bam, bam.
Was your husband excited by the changes, would you say?
At first, when we started, he worked very hard to build a store. So he had to tile the store, paint the store, put up the shelves, do everything to the store. But I think he didn't have the friends he had, like, back home. So he got very depressed because there was a void in his life. Dancehall was not his thing. He couldn't associate it with the dancehall, too.
Did his alcoholism worsen when he got depressed?
Yes. And then he started on drugs also. And he changed just like that overnight. And I could see him deteriorating as we go along. It makes me very sad that...
And your husband had multiple stints in rehab. How were you coping? Because you were putting so much into trying to build this new business. How were you coping with him falling apart, in a way, at the same time?
Pray a lot. And the business that take our mind off him. Because when you go to the work, you have to put on a different face, a different hat. And I think, like my mother, she was so sad many times when my father came home drunk. I tried to shield my kids a lot. I tried to be happy for them. I tried to learn all about the sickness and how it affects families. Because it was first so shameful that I would tell lies that my husband is gone on a trip.
When he'd actually be at home?
Yes, when he's at home. And I had to cover a lot for him. So he really detached himself completely from the business. And it was hard for my children. And because of that, I went for therapy and whatever it takes to make me cope. So that I didn't hate him, but I hate his sickness.
Towards the end of his life, would you say that he was a completely different person?
Yes, he was. He abused himself so much that he couldn't just stop, because we even forced him in a lot of rehab, but it didn't work. And he couldn't appreciate even the music that he had done so many years, you know. Nothing was of interest to him. So the whole family was sad. And then he moved to Florida. And I would go down to visit him. And we had to make a lot of restriction on him also. Moving from place to place, have people 24 hours to take care of him. It was very hard for us.
How old was your husband when he died?
When Vincent passed on, he was 65 years old. Part of me was very sad, but part of me was happy also. Mm-hmm. Because he had suffered so long and couldn't help himself. And we all suffered with him. I cried many, many times while writing my book. You know, I did the autobiography for 4 years. Tears were just flowing through me. I'm just crying. But I think it was a healing process for me too. And looking back, you know, if I had to do it over again, I would do the same thing.
I'm still in love.
You told me about how during the hurricane in Jamaica, how you thought that you'd lost all of the original tapes and everything in Studio 17 had been destroyed. What was it like to discover that actually nearly all of the original tapes had survived the hurricane?
I was happy to know that it was able to recover, because the people were looking for money. They weren't interested in tapes.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know these were these incredible tapes, yeah.
We didn't know they were important. We didn't take them with us.
Because you didn't take them with you, and I hear that your grandson, Joel, was particularly keen that these tapes should be brought to New York, digitized, preserved, that they should really be taken care of.
Yeah. Yes, they saw the value of them, which I didn't see.
So this is your grandson, Joel. He also
yes.
worked for VP Records, and he ended up moving back to Jamaica, in part to be a sort of pair of ears on the ground. Do you think that Joel had inherited that sort of chin family knack for spotting a star, spotting a hit?
Yes, and Joel was similar to my husband. He was very sociable. He would have a lot of patience with them. He would call me in the nights and he said, "Grandma, listen to this song, listen to this song." I say, "Yes, Joel, well, who are you recording now?" I'm doing it, Tana. Listen to our voice, listen to our voice. Listen to what's going on. So we would talk for hours on the phone because he was so excited in the studio when he was doing the recordings.
Through Joel, they spotted a new rising star who'd go on to become one of the biggest names in dancehall.
Dirty young. Kill it, sus. Yeah. The sound of all I met, the whole world knows. If I'm a girl up to date with the poor them.
Sean Paul released his first album with VP Records. And when everybody sort of began to realise that this could be the next big thing, you teamed up with Atlantic Records for his second album, which is Dirty Rock, which is this huge, huge album. When that was released, I mean, it went wild. That must have been such a crazy period.
Yes, it was so exciting.
Shake that thing, miss. Can I shake that thing, miss? And I better shake.
I heard that your granddaughters decided that Get Busy should be the first Sean Paul song.
Yes. Christina was about 7.
There's something so wild about a 7-year-old deciding that Get Busy should be the first song for Sean Paul. I love that.
Yes, she was the one that picked that era.
And another song that Sean Paul did on that album is I'm Still In Love With You. Which had originally been performed by Alton Ellis, who was one of the big names hanging around Studio 17 back in the 60s. What was it like for you to hear that version?
Wonderful. That was the best one I like on the LP because it brought back so many memories. Yeah. And the video was nice also because it had a little dance hall in it and it was very special. It reminded me of when the studio was in full swing and we were doing so good. So it felt a joyous time come back to us.
So obviously it was your grandson, Joel, who first brought Sean Paul to you. Tell me what happened to Joel.
It was sad, very sad, because they shot him. We didn't know why he was shot. We didn't even know that he had enemies around him because he was so sociable, just like my husband.
After Joel's death, his father, Clive, decided to get all of those original tapes, to gather them up and actually digitise them and restore them, which is something that Joel had always wanted to happen. When you listen back to those early recordings, with all of that in mind, what is it like for you to hear those old songs?
When I listen to them and I hear my husband's music playing, the sound of the instrument, how live it sounds, how the band sounds, how live, they sound so inviting. I really appreciate it more.
The night seems to fade, but the moonlight lingers on. Are there wonders for everyone?
And obviously your children, back in the day in Kingston, used to hang out around the shop and, you know, work behind the counter with you sometimes. Even now, nowadays, it's still a family affair. A lot of your children work in the business.
Yes, third generation works in the business.
The third generation.
Yes,
so you've got your grandchildren
myself,
working in the business.
My children and their children. So my father said to me once, Pat, I don't know what the hell they're saying in the music, but I have to love it because it's your business.
Do you still love it?
I don't listen to much music, but you know what intrigued me? In the summertime, when I'm driving on the parkway and then the glass is down because it's summer and I hear reggae playing, it brings me right back to Jamaica. I say, oh my God. It's just a beautiful feeling to hear reggae music playing all over the place. It gives me a sense of happiness and happy that I'm here living it.
So you recently celebrated your 84th birthday. I hope you don't mind me giving that away to everyone. But
No, I don't.
Okay, good.
Age is just a number, they said. It all depends on how you feel.
Do you still have that same ability, that Miss Pat ability to spot a hit?
More than ever.
Yeah.
More than ever. My ears is always to the street and to my friends.
Love is all I bring in my khaki suit and tie.
Miss Pat, a doyen of Jamaican music. Her book is called Miss Pat, My Reggae Journey. Our time's up for today. I'm Emily Webb. Bye for now. Watch out with your